Hi, I'm Elvis Mitchell, and thanks for listening to The Treatment. Some of the most entertaining stories produced today, however, are not on the big screen, but they can be heard on KCRW's Unfictional, intimate stories and artful documentaries crafted by some of the most talented radio producers across the world. Check it out. You can find Unfictional on KCRW's iTunes page. From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I guess this year Hellboy is legal. He's 21 years old.
Yes.
The first Hellboy book, Seed of Destruction, was 1994, right?
Right.
1994, gosh. And I met its creator and primary artist, Mike Mignola, in 2001 at the Lake Placid Film Festival.
I remember it well.
Hellboy's lived on in film, on television. He's now in this continuing series, Hellboy in Hell. The newest edition is The Descent. He's also got a book that he's authored with a character he's used before with Hellboy, Frankenstein. The book is Frankenstein Underground. Mike Mignola is here. Mike, it's such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the key operative for the BPRD, shall we? It's interesting because in your drawing of him in the early days, he was much more classically heroic. And the last few years, he's become a bit more demonic. I mean, the face has become longer and a bit more gaunt. All that musculature is gone a little bit.
I don't think of him being more demonic. I just think he's getting older.
Well, he's definitely getting gaunt.
His shoulders are gone.
Yes.
He's very gaunt.
He's even kind of slooped shoulder. He doesn't quite stand up straight anymore.
Oh, yeah, because I figure that hand of his is very heavy. So everything's dragging. If you look at the old drawings, his sideburns kind of went up and back, and now they hang there like they're full of soup. he's getting old like his creator's getting old. He's tired. He wants me to end this book so he can go home.
Well, the character's pretty much been continually in publication since you created him. I mean, in one way or another, there's been a series or something. And let's have you describe our hero for those who don't quite know the character.
He is theoretically, or at least the tagline was, he's the world's greatest occult detective, which is ridiculous because he's a terrible detective. He's
when he figures something out, it's almost by accident.
He usually just falls through something and lands on something, and he almost never wins by any kind of deduction or even heroic action. He just survives stuff, and fortunately, the bad guy usually ends up blowing himself up. It's a comic written by a dumb guy. He's a demon on Earth, raised by good guys to be a good guy, and now he's dead, which makes him a lot more fun to draw because I don't have to worry about cars and buses where he is. Almost the entire reason I killed him was so he would go to a land entirely made of stuff I wanted to draw. So
that's... We should also say, too, he's enormous and red, has big horns that he files down.
Yes.
And as a baby had his right arm lopped off and was given
a big stone hand, which for years nobody asked why. And eventually I had to kind of do a story about the hand so people would go, oh, yeah, that's right. We did, you know, we never even wondered what the hell that was.
See, because I always thought that, and I mentioned this to you when I met you, that I thought what you wore on to do with that just sort of throw us right in the middle of it, because so many comics – and so many comics you worked on, because you started in mainstream comics, are so busy explaining things that by the time they get to the action, you're already bored with it. And you threw us right in the middle with Hellboy.
Because I didn't know what I was doing. By now that we're getting closer to the end, I do know where it's going, so I can actually rattle things off. But for the longest time, I didn't really know what I was doing. And so I wrote a lot of vague prophecies and things and hinted at things and figured that eventually I would figure them out. So, if I'd worked out this whole story ahead of time, maybe I would have been one of those guys who page one, blah, 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 trot all that stuff out and bore the audience to death. But I simply didn't know.
Because I always thought that for you, this is one of these things where you just were doing the things that you didn't want to, that you were bored with in comics. And that idea of constantly having to explain what was going on was a part of the raison d'etre.
Well, since I'd never written comics before, it'd never been my job to explain stuff. My job was always just to draw what somebody else came up with.
But you had to draw a lot of explanations.
I guess. But that's pretty easy. You draw a head with a lot of room for a giant-ass word balloon so somebody else can fill it in. But no, I just didn't know what I was doing. Matter of fact, I knew the kinds of stories I wanted to do. I wanted to do monster stories, and I came up with a character. I knew that if I drew a regular human being who fought all this stuff, I'd get bored drawing it. So I made up a character that I thought would be fun to draw. And the gag was going to be that he would look like a monster. I mean, he'd look like a monster. So he'd be fun to draw. And he would just be the good guy. And we would never really address the fact that he has a tail and hooves and horns. It was as simple as that. The devil is a good guy. And nobody seems to notice that he's the devil. And I did a little origin sequence at the beginning of the first issue, but that was really going to be it. And then,
but that was even kind of a throw with that little origin you did in that first issue.
Yeah, it was just enough to throw Nazis in there and establish him in World War II because I always thought all the best heroes come from World War II. And then it was never going to be dealt with again. And then little by little, that kind of took over and here we are.
But here we are now, where we are now is just this idea is that and one of the, you talked about him falling through stuff, but that's a motif. I mean, I can't think of an issue where Hellboy isn't in free fall.
It's the only time you get to see his feet. And quite often I forget that he's got a tail until he's falling through the air, and then you go, oh, that's right, I got to remember to draw a tail.
But I just like that idea that sort of constant fall, and the falling is almost like the way you fall in a dream.
I guess.
I mean, there's something just slightly dislocating about the fall. I mean, it's not sure where anybody's going to land up, where he's going to end up making an impact. And whenever he falls, he definitely makes an impact. And it's quite disruptive when he makes that impact.
Yeah. It's just what I do. It's you know, I love to think that people think I have rationales for a lot of stuff I do. I'm not very smart. It's all gut level stuff.
Well, my guest who refuses to give a rationale to what he's doing but does a terrific job of anyways, Mike Mignola. His newest Hellboy book is in the Hellboy in Hell series is The Descent. It's The Treatment. But I guess what I'm liking about these series so much is when that I'm thinking about an image from this issue I have here with a heart inflamed, which is just really extraordinary, and that heart just tumbling down from one spot to another. How does something like that come to you?
Well, that I was raised Catholic. There's a lot of being raised Catholic, and there's a lot of imagery that's so powerful that comes from sitting there in a church looking at really scary imagery and going, oh, this is cool. So, you know, Gian Wilson did a great cartoon about that, about a little kid sitting in church looking at a stained glass window with, you know, some saint, you know, having his head cut off. But I think a lot of that stuff was ingrained, like all the stuff I read at a young age, reading Dracula at a young age, reading like pulp magazine stuff at a young age. I think being raised Catholic and that stuff being inserted into your head at a young age, and then you just let it cook. You know, you let the Catholicism and the Jack Kirby comics and Dracula all cook together, and you know, it comes spilling out. I mean, it's such powerful imagery and ritual and stuff that it just it comes out. So I'm playing with those things, whether I'm doing it consciously or not, it's just in there.
But I'm glad you mentioned ritual because that's really important. There's almost always ritual involved in these adventures, of once often sort of demonic ritual.
Yeah.
But ritual protocol is really important in these stories.
There's two parts of my brain. There's the part that writes the bad guy and there's the part that writes the good guy. And the bad guys come from me watching Bible epics and being raised in the church and Shakespeare. So that guy will go on and on making big speeches where I can hear a priest voice or Jesus's voice or some Shakespearean actor. I can hear that voice. And then there's a part of me that's so embarrassed that I'm writing that's Hellboy's voice. So I'll have I mean, there are stories where the bad guy will go on for two or three panels, and then Hellboy will make some, you know, like, shut up, you're boring me to death kind of a statement, because that's the other part of my brain going, oh, my God, stop the other guy from talking. That's how it works.
So these, in effect, are conversations you're having with yourself that you put on the paper.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of this stuff, me trying to just sort out the different voices in my head. Fortunately, they, you know, it seems to work. Otherwise, God knows where I'd be.
Well, what's so much fun about these bad guys, and there's certainly Macbeth in these, in The Descent, is the formalism, which the sort of demand to be heard and almost not talking to anybody, just talking.
Yeah. It's I mean, sometimes it's there because you need somebody to trot out information. But a lot of times, and I've gotten myself into some trouble, or certainly the book's evolved in certain ways, because characters show up. I'm an artist first. So I'll design a page. I draw people interacting. And then when I come to write that, I realize I have no idea what the hell these guys are supposed to be saying to each other. It's just on a page. It looks cool to have the guys punching each other, and then they look at each other, and then something else happens, and they look at each other again. And then when you come to write that, you go, I don't know what the hell they're saying when they're looking at each other. So that's how Hellboy became the Beast of the Apocalypse, because he was fighting this the goddess Hecate, and I had nothing for them to say to each other. So she started blah, 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 some prophecy stuff. And I'm sitting there going, oh, really? Oh, okay, I got nothing else, so that's what you write out there. And then it turns out Hellboy's the Beast of the Apocalypse because you had nothing else for the characters to talk about.
But there's also something about him that's really kid-like. I mean, he really just wants to be done with this stuff and be somewhere else. I mean, there's an impatience in the character that still exists even in The Descent.
Yes, I think there's a – you know, I've never really given that much thought. I mean, Del Toro did stuff with that in the movie and made him much more childlike. To me, he was an old guy who just really wanted – to not be – I don't know what else he wanted to do. I don't know that he had a room with a pool table that he'd rather be in.
But he wanted to be somewhere else. That's almost always the case.
There's just – I always figured he was tired of doing this job. It's nothing surprises him. It's just, oh, crap, this again. Yeah, I have no idea if he had any other place to go. He just figured there's got to be something better to do than this.
But that – I mean, when you're talking about Guillermo del Toro did the movies, and there's a – and I don't even think it in terms of innocence so much as just like an impatience. Like, let's get on with this. What's going on here? Can we move this along just a little bit?
Yeah, it was interesting that the character, and I think Del Toro was real true to the spirit of the character, but he was able to make him really young. And in my mind, he's really old. But we were able to kind of do the same thing with the character. So, yeah, maybe, you know, that impatience is – kind of what it is. And part of it is, I mean, maybe it is because I draw real slow and I just, you know, by the time I've drawn this thing, I want out. So he wants out. I mean, he's so much me. There's so much of me in that character, which is the only way I knew how to write something. I mean, I didn't think I could write this comic. I started out plotting the comic and working with another writer, John Byrne, because I'd never written anything. So little by little, what I realized is, well, I can write him because he would just say what I would say. The other characters are kind of, you know, that's where they end up Shakespearean and all these other things. But Hellboy, at least, I always know what Hellboy would say in that situation because he's me.
We should say John Byrne is another famous comic artist who a lot of people who are big fans will know from his run in the X-Men in the late 70s and early 80s. But the John Byrne stuff, the early stuff, had a kind of comic book sort of glossiness to it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Again, I was very fortunate to be able to work with John because I don't think I could have done the book by myself. I had just in my entire life, my entire career is all about having no confidence. So I had no confidence in my ability to write a story. But I thought I would just come up with stuff I wanted to draw, tell John what I wanted to draw, and he'd write stories for me. But then by the time I got around to actually doing the first Hellboy book, I'd taken all my ideas and crammed them together so I had a story. And then for John to be able to script it, I had to kind of write it so John knew what to write. And John cleaned it up and made it professional and slick. And then I realized I kind of liked it when it was a little bit wonkier the way I wrote it. And John, to his credit, always knew I should be writing the book.
Yeah.
And he never treated it like it was our book. It was always, I'm just there to help you out. And John gets a bad rap for a lot of stuff, some of which is probably justified. But for me, he just helped me out. At the end of the first series, he just said, well, kid, you're on your own. But it wasn't like we had a falling out or anything. He just said, no, now you know you can do it. I just needed to do 4 issues of the comic, basically with training wheels.
It's The Treatment. We'll take a break with my apparently diffident guest, Mike Mignola, the creator and artist, primary artist on the terrific series Hellboy, and his new book that he's writing, Frankenstein Underground. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive angel clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back. I'm still here. It's The Treatment. I'm thrilled to be here with Mike Mignola, creator of Hellboy. I think that one of the things that I find so much fun about the character is just, again, if people have a criticism of John Byrne, it might be that he's a little bit too slick and too professional, and the stuff is almost selling itself.
I've never been accused of being too slick or too professional.
I would disagree with that, because for somebody who's talking the way you do, you turn out a lot of stuff. You do a lot of work.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's like I will never consider myself a writer, though I've been writing for more than 20 years. So I guess by some definition, I am a writer. And I do write a lot of books now that I don't draw. So on those books, I'm really just the writer. But I think I'm in such awe of people, especially people who write prose, that I would, you know, they're writers. I would never consider myself a writer. That's why I always call myself a cartoonist. I could never use any kind of lofty, you know, I'm a graphic novelist. Can't do that. It's like, I do comic books or funny books or, you know, I have to reduce it to the terms my father would use, you know. He's a f***ing idiot. He draws funny books. That's about what that's what my business card should say. If my father had written it.
Well, because as you're talking about this, there's so often characters are quoting other writers in your work. Mm. And it's funny you say that, because it's almost like you're saying, well, if I have this writer in here, then there's some writing in the book somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I do tend to quote people that are long dead that I admire. It makes me look smart, which is very important to me. And it's my book. It's more and more, especially now that I killed him. It really is just my playground. So I get to do whatever I want. And I think the more I've been able to get away with, the more you go, well, if I could get away with that, then let me get away with this. There's not a conscious effort to make a comic that's different than what other people are doing, but you end up just referencing yourself. And the more you get away with, the more you just look at what you do and what you can do, and not looking around and saying, yeah, but what should I be doing? The third Hellboy story I did, the first one John Byrne scripted. The second one was a nightmare because I wrote it myself and I didn't know what I was doing. The third one, I had so much fun, and it was partially an adaptation of an old Irish folktale, a story called The Corpse. And I had so much fun doing it that when it was done, I thought it was unpublishable.
Why?
Because it was so different than anything I'd seen before. And I think because I had so much fun doing it. And I thought that wasn't work. And it was different. And I think it was almost like, I mean, it was 22 pages long. And I don't remember drawing it particularly fast, but I probably did. And it was like when I hit page 22, I sobered up and went, holy shit, what's this? And I remember going out to lunch with somebody and showing them the whole thing. And I'm in a panic because I got to turn this thing in because they're using it for something. And he read it. And at the end, he's like, you know, it's the best thing you've ever done. And I'm like, how'd that happen? And actually, and it's funny because I look back at that story and there's stuff I did in there where I was just having fun. And again, like going back, I was just trusting my gut. And so there was storytelling things and there was pacing things and stuff I did that just, it all really worked. And I think it was because I was having a good time.
Because as I read a lot of stuff, and you tell me that third story, it's almost as if it's like one of those Mad Magazine movie parodies where some Mort Drucker-drawn character walks in and goes, what am I doing here? I mean, that's what came across in that.
Yeah, I've never quite had Hellboy turn to the audience and say, I have no idea what I'm doing. But it comes close. There are moments where the characters are talking to each other in such a way that I go, they're not really talking to each other. They're letting the audience know. And in fact, it was very important to me when I started the Hellboy and Hell book because, you know, I killed him off.
Which shocked, I have to say, shocked me just because for me, Hellboy was always existing in a kind of a figurative purgatory anyway.
Right.
And then you moved him into a real purgatory through these series of books into hell.
Well, I needed to get him someplace where he'd be more fun to draw. Because I had left the book. Around the time of the movies, I suffered a real severe lack of confidence in my own drawing and my own everything.
Triggered by?
I'm not sure what. Maybe the fact that more people liked the book. There was more attention on the book.
Did that become pressure?
And I just felt like at some point I felt like I couldn't meet expectations. You know, and also I came up with what was a really long story, and I knew I would never have had the time to do this long story at the same time. The movie stuff is going on, so you're like, you're working, and then you got to go to Europe, and then you got to come back, and then something else is going on. So I was having my work time was really interrupted, and it looked like it was going to be interrupted for a while. So I'd come up with this long story, found another artist that was willing to do it, and at the, you know, somewhere in the middle of that long story, I'd already always planned to kill him off eventually. And then when that story started shaping up, I went, oh, this is the story where I get to kill him off. And it took 6 years of the other guy drawing the book, Duncan Fregrato drawing the book for 6 years. By then, I was really chomping at the bit. The movies was, you know, they were behind me and I had this, you know, I really wanted to get back to drawing comics.
And it actually kind of belonged to you again in a way that it probably didn't for a while, right?
Yeah, it was a little confusing. There's some stuff that goes on when that stuff is going on. But now it was mine again and I was itching to get back and draw it. But if I killed him and threw him into hell, then I was going back to a book where I could really draw whatever I wanted. And even though, I mean, I played fast and loose with the real world. I mean, I think the whole time I was drawing it, I think I drew 3 cars, you know. But I really wanted to go back and do something where the whole goal of what I was doing on the page, the entire world, had to be what the inside of my head looks like. I am so far inside my own head, which is the politest way I can phrase that, that this is the kind of stuff I'm going to do. I mean, my goal on some level is to run this book into the ground so that when it's over, you're not going to miss it, you know. But – and also it's just – the work's become much more personal. So since Hellboy actually had become kind of a commercial character, especially with the movies and stuff, then you go, I'm not Marvel Comics. I'm not DC Comics. I don't need to maintain this thing as this commercial vehicle, though it would be nice if it finished paying for the house. But we've got all these other books going on. So this book, Hellboy and Hell, my little corner of my little empire, I'm going to take that commercial character and I'm going to drag him down into this odd little place.
It's the treatment, I guess, who's doing a bad job of doing a bad job with his own creation.
They keep buying it.
I'm sorry. Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy. I feel like this is your way just of planting the flag, the Mignola flag, back in Hellboy again, because it had become – routine's not the word I mean to say here. Would it become more adventure-like and less kind of personal? Because the best stuff to me that you do is the kind of stuff I wouldn't see anywhere else. There's a constant sense of play in it.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know that it ever got really routine. I think they were always odd.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? There's like the idea of narrative certainly became very important.
Right. I think at some point, maybe there's a point where I said, I've done the ones that make sense. I did a book called Conqueror Worm, which I thought that is mechanically and everything else. It was a great pulp era type adventure story.
Well, even House of the Living Dead, even something like that. I mean, those are that had that kind of feel to it,
right?
Too.
Which is actually it's nice because that's a very recent one, House of the Living Dead. So I was able to go back and do a story that made sense where all the pieces connected up in a neat way. But I think Conqueror Worm was the best long-form Hellboy story I did at that time, and I kind of felt like I've done it. So now what am I going to do? I didn't want to do a whole string of books like that. I've been doing this book for 21 years now, but somehow I still don't want to repeat myself. So how do you do that? So instead, I'll make up stories like The Ghoul, where the whole gag is Hellboy meets a guy in a cemetery and the guy only speaks in lines from the old 1700s graveyard poets, none of which I had on hand. So it was fun. I wrote Hellboy's End of Things, But I had no idea what the ghoul was going to say, and then had to have my wife, because I'm computer illiterate, go on the computer, find these old poems. I had to search through these old poems and try to find dialogue for a story that was already drawn. So that's not everybody's favorite Hellboy story, not anybody's favorite Hellboy story, but I felt like I'm playing. I'm doing something.
But those it's so funny if basically what you're doing is painting yourself in the corners and then trying to look paint a window to climb out of, because to me these are the stories that kind of matter, because they're the stories that you don't forget.
Well, they're also the stories nobody else in their right mind would do. So, which I think actually became important at some point, especially for me. I mean, I'm a Berkeley art student. I was. And I am still at heart. So I think when the book became commercial, it became really important to let especially young creators and as well as fans know that I don't want to be that safe. I don't want to be the guy running a business and coughing up what I think the audience wants. It's important for me to show that I'm still playing and that I'm still, I guess, taking risks, you know?
But the creation of the character came from a place of not wanting to be safe, didn't it?
Not really. I mean, I guess I didn't realize how weird a character it was. You know, I didn't know that the name Hellboy would be a problem in places.
And it was. I mean, it basically sort of created this narrative.
Certainly when it comes to movies and TV, it became a problem. But I was really just – I was so bad at drawing regular comics that I was just looking – for a place where
Wait a second. You thought you were bad at drawing regular comics? Because you doing it a lot. I mean, you worked really constantly, and that sort of the boldness and the use of shadow, but that fine line was all stuff that was, I thought, incredibly memorable. So I remember when Hellboy started, I was thrilled that you had your own book.
It is funny that the style, my drawing style, had evolved to a point that a lot of people thought, that's a pretty ballsy thing. You're doing some weird stuff and you're doing very striking images or whatever they thought.
And images
same time,
designed
I'm
more for
I'm the most chicken guy on earth. So somehow there was like two different things going on, but I was so uncomfortable drawing most mainstream comics. I couldn't give a shit about Batman, but at least Batman, I could draw him. You know, he looks good if he's mostly in shadow. That's really cool.
But even your Batman is really kind of stylized and almost never in the foreground.
Yeah.
And often so different from that this stuff felt like such a breath of fresh air to me that when you went to start Hellboy, I thought, wow, I can't wait until he does this stuff, creating his own context for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really – I had to at least try to get out of the mainstream stuff. Or it wasn't even getting out of the mainstream stuff. It was I need to create a book that's made out of things I can do. Because I really – how many Batman stories could I do set in a cemetery? You know, at some point – somebody was going to hand me a plot where they said, he's got to get in the Batmobile. It's like, I can't draw a car. You know, he's got to go to a building. I can't draw a building. If I make my own guy and I'm in control of the plots, he's going to roam around fields and forests and old castles. Part of it is being lazy because I just want to draw what I want to draw. And part of it is fear of drawing stuff I don't know how to draw.
Well, you solved all those problems in a masterly way. And I have to say, we've gone through the entire show and still not yet got to Frankenstein Underground. So I only have to say you have to come back.
Well, I'm happy to come back. And the book's called Frankenstein Underground. What more do you need to know?
Maybe there's a little more to it than that.
There's not much. No, there's not much more.
My guest, who couldn't be the worst salesman for himself and does terrific, readable, graphically vital work anyway.
Sell my work because I can't.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, nobody's made two movies on me. Is Mike Mignola. His new book is in the continuation of the Hellboy in Hell series, is The Descent. And pick up Frankenstein Underground, which is not entirely self-explanatory. I don't care what he says. Mike, thanks so much for being here. Please come back.
Thanks, Elvis. Happy to.
My pleasure. Recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. The editor and producer is Jenny Radelet. I'm Rethinking Hellboy. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.